reported by Dean and Doc, it just left the armory to be dealt with.
I'd like to get a look right now, but I figure it'd be better if I showered and slept first.
Mildred looked at the armorer in amazement.
John, I never thought I'd hear you say that. Perhaps I should look at you in a professional capacity.
That what you call it?
At that, they parted company. Jack, Dean, and Doc took showers and slept. Mildred and JB cleaned up before locating their own private room. Ryan and Christy had already located theirs and took the rare opportunity to make love before sleep engulfed them. It was morning when they all awoke. Although the redoubts were artificially lit and could change from day to night at the flick of a switch, the companions had their wristchrons to help them keep track of time in the outside world. They knew it was mid-morning by the time they had risen and breakfasted on the edible remains left from the night before. After finishing, they made their way to the armory.
Need Plasex more than anything else, except spare ammo for the blasters.
JB punched in the set code for the door.
But if we find any blasters that are more powerful and in better condition than ours, we should load up on what we can carry.
As the door opened and the extent of the armory became clear, the normally taciturn armorer pursed his lips.
But this hasn't seen the light of day for a century.
He almost crept into the room, surveying the boxes of oiled rifles, the machine blasters still cased with their constituent parts, the hand blasters that hung on the walls alongside the rows of Grens, and the boxes of Plasex that were stored in one corner. Ryan stepped into the room behind him.
I know you could spend days looking over this, but I reckon that maybe we should get up top as soon as possible, see if we can get out and find out where the fire-blasted hell we've ended up this time.
JB snapped out of his reverie and nodded.
Yeah, reckon so. Let's get loaded up here.
While the companions searched the armory for spare ammo to fit their respective blasters, JB restocked the body belts and pouches in which he carried enough Grens and Plasex to start and finish a small war, which sometimes he literally had to do. Ryan allowed him some time to pore over the weapons after the others had finished restocking their own supplies of ammo. Although there was a plentiful supply and variety of blasters, there was nothing that hadn't been seen before, and they each individually elected to stick with the weapons they knew and trusted. The one-eyed warrior gave JB extra time, not just because he knew the armorer was like a kid in a pre-nuke candy store, but also because it gave JB time to assess the full range of the armory and pick out the most efficient and useful weaponry. Eventually, he finished his task and turned to Ryan Cotter.
Okay, let's see where we are.
Think it'll make it open, Dad?
Ryan shrugged. Should. The corridors haven't been twisted enough to warp the frame. Maybe some Plasex if it gets stuck, JB?
The armorer paused, squinting at the slowly rising sector and at the surrounding tunnel. Ryan was right to a certain extent. After leaving the armory and making their way up to the top level, they had stopped and looked at each level. It seemed that there had been some earth movement within the redoubt, but not enough to cause any collapse in the tunneling, nor to cause any breaches or rifts. But right up at the top level, it seemed as though something had pushed against the entrance, causing the door to warp slightly and making its ascent difficult. It wasn't from the inside.
Plasex could be tricky. There's nothing inside, so maybe the problem is on the outside. And if we've got a real heavy rock fall, then the blast could get directed inward.
Ryan listened to JB, trusting his judgment on the use of any weapons, and nodded as the armorer concluded.
Okay, we'll see how far it rises first.
There was a tense silence among the companions as the door labored upward.
No rock fall, so why do I stick?
That is a thorny question, my dear Jack. A myriad of possibilities await. And yet how can we be prepared for any, unless we are prepared for all?
Hot pipe, Doc. You talk some real weird shit sometimes.
A trifle crudely put, young Dean, but you do have a point.
Well, I'd say we're about to find out just exactly what that problem may be, out of all the myriad possibilities, of course. One thing's for sure, it was no rockfall.
The door of the redoubt was now fully retracted. Before them was nothing more than an azure-blue sky, with little sign of any chem clouds within the area framed by the portal. A couple of large dark birds circled at a height that would appear to have been several hundred feet, indulging in a complex series of maneuvers that presaged a savage battle. The sun was a burning orange globe surrounded by a haze, indicating that although there were no chem clouds in sight, the atmosphere was still tainted by the remnants of the Nucost. The swirling, skittering figures of the large birds flew across the sun and were lost momentarily in the light, far too bright to stare into. In less than the blink of an eye, they were out the other side, and the ritual dance had ended. The bird at the front turned, whirling suddenly in the air in a tight movement that swung them around to face the oncoming assailant. But his attempt to catch the following bird was doomed. The second bird ducked beneath the first as it turned, moving underneath, then jabbing swiftly and sharply, its beak tearing at the momentarily exposed belly of the leading bird. The first bird began to fall, a trail of blood, sign that something vital was torn. The fight was that swift, that sudden, and that savage. As the first bird fell, the second bird wheeled in the sky with deceptive leisure, heading for its falling opponent. It swooped beneath the plummeting bird, jabbing at it so savagely that it changed the course of its fall. It followed it down, slowing the momentum of the fall by pushing it from side to side, sometimes jabbing so savagely and with such force that it propelled the now chilled bird upward for the slightest moment. The corpse, which had given one last harsh cry, was now disintegrating as it fell, ripped apart by the attack of its rival.
Welcome back to the real world.
Ryan walked to the lip of the tunnel and peered over the edge. The tunnels and corridors on the top level of a redoubt always sloped upward, but suddenly Ryan realized that the angle of ascent had been slightly more than usual. Looking out over the land, he could see that it was a bare desert, with very little scrub cover, and the reddish-brown earth was dry and loose. It was also some 50 feet below them, with a rock face that fell away from the mouth of the tunnel. J.B. joined him, pushing his spectacles up the bridge of his nose as he looked down.
So it was a rock fall, but not how either of us reckoned.
Yeah, looks like this redoubt was another one of the kind that was set into a mountainside. And when some of that mountain moved,
he gestured to emphasize his point,
the redoubt moved up and the road in moved down.
Still, it's not much of a climb. Even Doc should be able to make it.
Doc's eyebrows rose as he peered over the armorer's shoulder.
Please do not mock me, John Barrymore. It would seem to be a simple descent.
Probably, Doc, but we don't know how safe it is yet. If the rocks have settled loosely, then...
Ryan gestured how the rocks would part.
Then we are buzzard fodder. A fair point.
Exactly.
Ryan turned to the others.
We'll take it one at a time. I'll go first, then Christy, Jack, Mildred, Dean, and Doc. J.B. last.
Mildred stared down at the steep slope of loose rocks.
Sounds fine to me. Sooner I get down, the better.
Then let's get to it.
The one-eyed warrior stepped off the lip of the redoubt entrance and onto the rocks, pressing hard with the ball of his foot to test the security of each rock before resting his weight. He turned and faced the rocks, using his hands to steady himself. The slope was deceptive. Although the descent seemed steep, the slope of the rocks was less sheer, the outcrops providing plenty in the way of foot and handholds. The problems arose from the fact that the rock face was composed of many individual rocks rather than one slab, and until the descent had been made, there was no way of knowing how secure the rocks were. Ryan took the descent slowly, searching for handholds and testing each rock. He stamped rocks with his boots, knocking some away from the face, landing firmly on others and using them to define a path. He was watched intently from above, all of the companions making a note of the path for when they would come to use it. This was made easier by the gaps of fallen rocks that had been rejected as footholds, which vaguely outlined Ryan's route. It was slow, but not difficult, and Ryan's progress was relatively steady. Despite that, he had to stop several times to wipe the sweat from his brow before it ran into his good eye, the occasional drop stinging his eyeball and making him blink furiously. He felt a sheen of sweat on his body, soaking into his clothes, and wondered how hot it would get at the height of the day. The desert seemed to stretch indefinitely in every direction, and although they had good water supplies, Ryan would feel happier when J.B. had taken some readings and worked out roughly where they were. They knew the characteristics of the Deathlands better than most trading parties, having traversed great distances with the help of the Matrans units. If it was going to be this hot, then they would need to preserve water and work out the direction in which a vill or some kind of vegetation would be likely. All of this crossed Ryan's mind, while the greater part of his attention was focused on his feet and hands. Any attack from around them, natural or otherwise, didn't bother him, as he knew JB would be on triple red while he was so exposed. Neither did he notice how far he had reached, so it was a pleasant surprise when One Foot, groping for a rock,